And good morning, everybody, on this beautiful Friday morning. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast on 88.1, and we're going to talk sports this morning with our sports guru, Mark Hyman. He's a former contributing editor at Business Week magazine and a former columnist for the Sports Business Journal. He's written for the New York Times, and he's currently on the faculty of George Washington University. He's also the author of several books, the latest of which is called Concussions and Our Kids. He joins us this morning on the line from New Jersey, where he's visiting his mom. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. So the Major League Baseball owners have been meeting this week at the Hyatt Hotel in downtown Baltimore by the harbor, and one of their big orders of business was to elect a new commissioner. They have done so. They did this yesterday. After a few votes, they decided on Rob Manfred. He's the current chief operating officer. He'll succeed Bud Selig, who is retiring in January at the age of 80. He was the odds-on favorite going in. It took a few votes. It looks like the owners vote for a new commissioner the way Cardinals vote for a pope. They wait until they finally get a majority. Do you read anything into the fact that it took them a few tries to come to consensus about Mr. Manfred?
Well, I mean, you're right about it being a Byzantine process. You put 30 high-powered, ultra-rich sports team owners in a room, and you're going to have dissent. I mean, that's just a given. In this case, Rob Manfred really was the choice that Bud Selig, the outgoing commissioner, had given his endorsement to and really wanted to get the job. And there was a small group of owners led by Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the Chicago White Sox, who were pushing another candidate, Tom Werner, one of the owners of the Boston Red Sox. So, you know, Werner got one more vote than he got enough votes to prevent Manfred from getting the nod on the first ballot. But, you know, eventually Manfred got the majority that he needed. So, you know, I think it's basically an endorsement of Bud Selig's term as commissioner, and I think we're basically going to see Rob Manfred steering the same course.
Briefly, what's Bud Selig's legacy for Major League Baseball going to be?
Well, you know, I think it's mixed. Early in his term, he had a real rocky time. Bud Selig presided over the 1994 lockout that canceled the World Series, the only time that's happened, and had a very difficult time with labor relations early in his term. And there's also the steroids crisis that really baseball was very slow to react to. Those are the negatives. I think on the positive side, you know, revenues in baseball have just skyrocketed in the last 10 years. The rise of digital revenue, meaning, you know, the MLB Network, MLB.com, all of those things have had an amazingly positive effect on baseball, and I think Bud Selig has to get credit for that. And one other thing that I'd mention is that we've got some pretty good competitive balance in baseball now, which we didn't have when Bud Selig assumed the job in 1992. I mean, just look at the American League right now. The teams leading the divisions in the American League are the Oakland A's, the Kansas City Royals, and the Baltimore Orioles. Three, you know, small to middle market teams, and that would not have happened in 1992.
Yeah, there's no longer these, you know, high payroll dynasties like the Yankees, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Bud Selig gets credit for that.
And Manfred was at Selig's side the whole time, or for much of the time that this was all happening. So, as you say, we can probably expect more of the same, or at least more of the same kind of vision and priorities.
Yeah, I mean, Manfred's strengths, and you know, the issues he knows best are labor relations and the whole testing regimen for drugs. Those are the issues he was most involved in. And I think, you know, in both cases, he had a very positive role. So if those are the issues you care about most in baseball, baseball hasn't had a work stoppage since 1994, and football, hockey, and basketball have all had work stoppages since then. So baseball now is in a pretty good place with its labor relations.
Well, speaking of teams that are in first place.
Something magic happens every time you go. You make the magic happen. The magic of Orioles baseball when the game is close.
The Baltimore Orioles are 7.5 games in front of the Toronto Blue Jays for first place. They are 14.5 games ahead of last place Boston Red Sox. And I say that simply because it's fun to say that. You know, the Orioles are just on a tear. Mark, I mean, what sticks out to you about the stats that have happened, say, like in the second half of the season, even like from the All-Star break to now?
Well, first of all, Tom, I told you we should have bought season tickets. I mean,
you did.
I begged you to go in with me on a plan, and you stiffed me, and now look at us. Now we're not going to go to the World Series, so thanks a lot for that.
Mea culpa maxima. Yep, you got it.
Well, you know, since the All-Star break, the Orioles have really been on fire. Since June 30, they have the best record in baseball, 27-11. They've won 8 straight series for the first time since 1993. They're leading the major leagues in home runs with 152. And the pitching, which, you know, has been a real question mark, I think, throughout the season, has been fantastic since the beginning of July. The collective ERA of the staff is under 3. So, I mean, they're really hitting on all cylinders now, and, I mean, that's reflected in the lead. I think they have the largest lead now of any team in any division in baseball. So, you know, start looking on the Internet for World Series tickets.
Yeah, I mean, playoff tickets, I mean, that's a real discussion that can start happening really fairly soon. I mean, they're inching along, getting mathematically guaranteed, you know, towards being guaranteed a spot in the playoffs. Hasn't happened yet. And they've done it, you know, with some pretty serious injuries. Manny Machado is out again for the second time. Matt Wieters has not played for most of the season. Speaking of injuries, let's talk about a former Oriole who had a short stint with the New York Yankees. Brian Roberts is apparently retiring from baseball. He's 36 years old.
Yeah, I was sad to see that. The Yankees, remember the Orioles chose not to re-sign Brian Roberts this season, and he did sign a one-year contract with the Yankees. And I guess about 10 days ago, the Orioles released him after they traded for Steven Drew, who had been who had been playing shortstop for the Red Sox, and the Yankees turned him into a second baseman. And Brian Roberts was hitting .237. I think another reason for his release was that he was two at bats shy of reaching a bonus payment with the Yankees. So the timing may have been related to that. But yes, you know, I'm feeling a little nostalgic because Brian Roberts was one of the Orioles' best players. You know, at a time when the Orioles weren't that good, but he was an all-star, two-time all-star player. In 2009, he led the American League in doubles with 56. But then his career took an unfortunate turn in a couple of ways. First, he was kind of caught up in the steroid scandal. He was named in the Mitchell Report and later acknowledged that he had taken steroids briefly, one or two times in 2003. And then, even more significantly, he suffered 2 concussions within 7 months of each other in 2010 and 2011, and he really was never the same player after that.
Well, we wish him all the best, but you're right. He really is a standout at a time when the Orioles were not by any means in contention. And there's something, you know, particularly touching about that, that even when the team itself isn't doing particularly well, Brian Roberts was always a standout star. Let's talk about another issue swirling around the Orioles, and that's this dispute about Masson, the television network that broadcasts not only the Orioles games, but the games of the Washington Nationals, I guess, is the Mid-Atlantic Sports Network. There's a strange arrangement with this thing in terms of who owns it and how much each party owns it. And Peter Angelos, the owner of the Orioles, has been in court with the league and the Nationals to try to hold off rejiggering the arrangement that they had. Give us some context of this. What was the arrangement that was in place in 2005 when the Montreal Expos moved down to Washington and became the Washington Nationals?
Tom, I think there are 2 important things to understand. The first is that the Orioles and the Nationals own this network, and that's a little bit different than the traditional arrangement where a team like the Orioles would sell the rights to broadcast its games to some television network. And then the team would receive that rights fee, and the television network would have the right to sell advertising. In this model, the Orioles own the network. They're not selling the rights. They're retaining the rights, and they're benefiting from selling all of the advertising. And it's a much more lucrative model for teams. That's number one. The second point is that Peter Angelos was very opposed to the Washington, to a Washington franchise for a long time. So when Major League Baseball made the decision to move the Montreal Expos to Washington, they got a lot of resistance from Peter Angelos, and rightly so, because the Orioles' territory included Washington. So as part of the agreement that resulted in Peter Angelos permitting this to go forward, he and the Orioles got a majority interest in this network called Masson, which also broadcasts Nationals games. And the agreement called for the Nationals' interest in that network to increase over time. And that's really what the fight is about right now, whether the agreement is equitable, whether the Nationals deserve a bigger slice of that pie. And Major League Baseball has been trying to mediate this dispute for several years, really, and has not gotten very far. And now it looks like it might actually result in litigation.
So the Nationals basically want to sort of change the agreement from how it was originally structured almost 10 years ago. They want a bigger chunk of the pie than they're getting, because I think everybody's finally woken up to the fact that, boy, this is a pretty lucrative way to do things.
Well, that's part of it. And it's also another factor is that the value of these television deals has increased dramatically from the time that this initial deal was negotiated. And the Nationals want a new deal, a revised deal that reflects that. And Peter Angelos' position is, hey, we negotiated a deal years ago, and we ought to be sticking to the terms of that deal. And, you know, Bud Selig, this is one of the kind of loose ends that he may be leaving behind. He has been trying for months and months to try to get these two sides to agree on a new formula, and he hasn't gotten very far.
Speaking of litigation, I want to talk about the O'Bannon case and the NCAA. Ed O'Bannon was a standout basketball player for UCLA. He's the lead plaintiff in a very interesting and very, I think it's not too strong a word to call it, revolutionary decision that was handed down just this week. What happens in this ruling in which the NCAA got something in between a slap on the wrist and a bat to the knees?
Yeah, very interesting and I think important case that is really going to change college sports fundamentally, I think, eventually, although the decision probably won't have much impact in the short term. But Ed O'Bannon's suit was about whether the NCAA needed to share some of the revenue that it was collecting for using the names and likenesses of college athletes. Ed O'Bannon's likeness was used in a video game, and he made the assertion that, hey, if you're using my likeness, I should benefit from this in some way financially. So what this decision really does for the first time is clears the way for players on the college level to collect a small amount of money for the revenue that's generated by these sources. The court decision says that they can collect up to $5,000 a year that is put in escrow and that the players can collect after they graduate.
And, of course, what it does is it shoots a big hole in the argument that amateurism is at the basis of the NCAA's activity. And I'm afraid, Mark, we're going to have to leave it there. We will pick up again on this, because this is not by any means the last we've heard of this issue with the NCAA. So appreciate your time this morning, as always, and safe trip home. Appreciate it.
Great talking to you, Tom.
Mark Hyman is on the sports management faculty at George Washington University. His latest book is called Concussions and Our Kids. We've got a link to more information on our website. Come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. That's it for us today. Maryland Morning is an original production of Your Public Radio, WIPR in Baltimore. The program is produced by Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay. Nathan Sterner directs and engineers. We've had production help this summer from Brandon Block, Alexandra Kennedy, and Justina Latimer. Today is their last day with us here at Maryland Morning, and we wish them all the best with thanks for all their help. Zeke's Coffee in Laurelville also helps us out. You can find them on the web at zekescoffee.com. You can find us on the web, too. Come to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning to leave a comment about something you've heard heard or make a suggestion about an interview you'd like to hear on the show. For Sheila and the entire Maryland Morning Team, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.